I think that pastors, most pastors I know, really have a difficult time being an administrator. They say we have felt mainly a call to preach, a call to teach, and yet suddenly we're thrust upon the responsibility to be an administrator. And what I've had to learn is what I've had to learn out of reading and studying and going to a few conferences. So I realize this is my responsibility, and I'm trying to do my best to cope with it. And I think you'd find that true of most pastors, that I don't think many of them really feel that this is their basic calling. Now, he gives 8 different things here that I think are helpful in looking at what a pastor or the church family, I think it would be better to put it even a pastor expects of a staff member. First of all, dedication. And I appreciate the thrust of our conference here. I think that's what this whole meeting's about, is that first of all, you be somebody. And then when you become a man or God, then you can begin to fulfill your responsibility on the staff. But dedication is a key. And I stress this with my staff, not only with the educational director and the ministers on the staff, but I try to say to our whole group, the janitors and the whole group, I feel in the team, as I said many times to our building engineer, look, if the lights are not on or if the heat's not on Sunday morning, I can't do my job. If we don't have heat on Sunday morning, I can't preach. So in a sense, you are essential to this thing. And I really try to build up a team spirit from all of our folks. And we meet once a week on Monday mornings with our staff, with our complete staff. We don't have all the janitors to meet with us, but the building engineer who's in charge of them meets with us. We meet with our church hostess. She has a kitchen staff that works under her. But all of our staff meets on Monday, every Monday morning, to worship, to pray. And then 3 times a year, I think I was mentioning this when we got changed in the room. So 3 times a year, we spend a day. We have done different things. We've gone up to the mountains or out to some retreat close by. But recently we have decided to stay in the church and go to another part of the building. We don't have a telephone. We do that for 2 reasons. One, we lose a lot of time traveling back and forth to a retreat place. We usually go out to some restaurant for lunch together. But between these weekly meetings and the 3 times a year all-day staff retreats, we really try to build up a fellowship, a bond of love, and a comradeship. Now, dedication is important. Notice the second thing there is enthusiasm. If a work deserves to be done, it deserves to be done with joy and fervor. He says, deliver me from the drooping dullard. I'll take the little less technical efficiency and change for a cheerful abandon toward the task ahead. And the third thing that Dr. Ford mentions is thoroughness. I suspect that more churches have suffered from having good plans poorly executed than from having no plans at all. Pity the pastor stuck with one or more staff members who can plan grandiose programs but who can seldom see them through. 4th is loyalty. And I like the way he puts this. He says loyalty is first to Christ and to the church and then to those who are on the staff and to the pastor. And I think that's true. I think in turn that the pastor has to give his loyalty to the staff. The people on my staff must know I'm going to stand with them. And if it gets to the place where I can't stand with them, I have a responsibility to talk to them personally. And if we can't work it out, we'll have to see where to go from there. But loyalty is so important. You make some notes along the way now, and we'll come back and discuss some of these. But I wanted to get the total picture before we open up for discussion. Honesty. Deception is deplorable anywhere, but especially in church staff relations. Jealousy, envy, competition, insecurity, or communication bottlenecks. Humanness, we want them to be themselves. Flexibility, Our work is with people, and people change. We've got to be flexible and maturity. I think those are eight good qualities that pastor of the church would like to see in a staff member. Let's look at that second sheet there. What a pastor, what the staff members expect of a pastor. I think one of my friends would look at that. And this was written by another minister. This is also found in Church Administration Magazine. The staff expects of the pastor consecration. Second, consideration. And I think a pastor has to be careful to give the staff member his place as a co-laborer and as a co-minister. And that there are many ways that I think we can show this consideration and to put them in the right place. The staff member expects of the pastor cooperation in what he's trying to do. Fourth, communicativeness. Fifth, companionship. This does not mean constant company, but it does mean the idea I think we talked about a while ago, being a friend. I think these are qualities that certainly you should expect to find in the pastor with whom you work. Now, I want to look at one other thing, and then we're going to talk. Now, look at this staff, a good staff. Good staff morale is no accident. This is by Dr. Lawson Hudson. Dr. Hudson's written a number of books and a very fine leader. The thing I want you to notice here, about halfway down the sheet, it mentions seven deadly sins in church staff relationships. One, criticism of one staff member to another. Two, siding with disgruntled church members who may have criticized other staff members. Three, failure to compliment. Fourth, suspicion. Fifth, complaint. This may be about the house, pay, or what other staff members get by with, orneriness of church members, or the lack of response from someone, complaining about the situation. Sixth, laziness is another deadly sin of staff relationships. And seventh, insincerity. Everyone feels insecure around people who are not genuine, natural, honest. Now, on down a little farther in this sheet, he gives us four or five things I want to look at, how to build the morale. He says, first of all, the principle of recognition. Put these people where they belong. Give them position. Encourage them before the people. And he says, even as much as salaries. And encourage the church to pay staff members a decent salary. I think that's a responsibility that we pastors have. I certainly have felt that and tried to do something about that through the years. Second principle of morale building is loyalty. I like that next paragraph down. It says, church staff members have to hang together or they may hang separately. And if y'all been on staff very long, I think you can see the value of that. Third, staff members ought to help each other bear the burdens. On the back side, you have three or four more. I think they're good. Church staff members should show appreciation. I think that means one to another. I think sometimes that the minister's youth may not take time to express appreciation to the choir director for a good music program. Or once in a while, the preacher preaches a good sermon. You know, it wouldn't hurt to tell the preacher he thought he preached a good sermon, you know. He needs a little encouragement along sometimes, too. You know, by the staff, I think this is a quality that we really need to develop. And likewise, these folks need to say, when you've had a good retreat, that was a great retreat. In our staff meetings on Monday morning, we try to evaluate, we try to review activities, and I'm sort of a pat on the back kind of a fellow anyway, and I just look for the good in anything anyway, and I really try to make that a time of encouraging everything that I can find any reason to encourage. I think this is really important. Show appreciation. Tough-mindedness. This is where I have difficulty in being tough sometimes, but let's read what he says there. This is the counterpart of showing appreciation. All of us hunger for ego satisfaction in our work. We have a hard time waiting until the judgment to hear the word, well done. The fact is, however, that each of us has to be tough-minded enough to do his job and hope that it will be acceptable. Our biggest problem is in maintaining morale is our own inner problem of anxiety. We get anxious lest we become failures and fail to do an acceptable job. Only the hearty can stand up in a church or a peace location. That's the one that they visit. But you know, I thought what Max Barnett said this afternoon in one of the groups we were in about the business of a staff member, for example, feeling that he has to be in the office from 8 to 5, when maybe as a youth director, your best work can be done out in the field and not try to punch a clock in at 8 o'clock and come in at 5. I've told the folks in our staff that that's fine. But if you can get out there and minister where the people are, whatever time they are, that's what I want you to do. Don't feel like you have to sit here behind the desk or punch in at 8 o'clock. But you see, I still have a little guilt complex if I don't punch in at a good time myself. Don't we have to feel that way about it? I'm out of the night, even most every night myself. Well, we need to learn how to know, and I think Max really has mastered this evidently, that I believe he said today that he doesn't go to the students until 12 o'clock. He doesn't go there because he works every night in the dormitory until 10 or 12 o'clock tonight. And therefore, he feels free not to keep businessmen hours all day and then work all night too. So, you have to be tough. Be willing to take the criticism of people who will make such petty criticism. Tough-minded, he said. Six, the autonomy of a staff. Each staff member must run his own life and stand up under this part of the load. In this, it is the other side of the point of number three, where it talks about bearing one another's burden. The Bible says every man shall bear his own burden. That means every one of us has a responsibility on the staff. If I goof off and don't do my job properly as a pastor, others are going to suffer. If anyone else on the staff goofs off and don't do their job properly, we all suffer. We all have our responsibility. And the final principle of good morale is communication. Now, the next to the last paragraph. These seven principles can be summarized in one sentence from the lips of our Christ. These things I command you, that you love one another. The heart of staff relations is I see that have a real love each for the other. Well, that's a lot of talking, but I felt like these were some good principles upon which we could build our discussion tonight. So you may have some special response to make to some of these points, or you may have some special questions that you'd like to raise about your responsibility on the staff and what we might could do to help you with it.
Who is on your staff, and how do you feel about who's
going to
be involved in three
or three
a year if you make
the money? I make, those decisions about who's going to be there. We have four ministers in the local church, a full-time minister of music, full youth, and a man who's business administrator, education director. We have two more full-time ministers on our staff who are mission ministers. They are in missions in low cost housing projects. Our church has erected buildings in these communities, but there'll never be churches that turn over so fast there, and the people just not stable enough to build a church. So we've gone down in these communities and put up buildings and have full-time men as pastors. These men come to all of our meetings. I'm sure they must get bored sometimes, but we feel that they need to be in touch with what's going on at the main church, and they feel like they want to. We have four secretaries. They come to all of the staff meetings. Our church host is our building engineer. I believe those are the ones who attend the Monday morning meetings, and they also attend the three retreats. Now, sometimes the four men, the four ministers in the main church, get together. I say every 2 or 3 weeks we get together and just touch base and see where we are. I really feel the need, and I'm really searching, you understand. I haven't got all the answers myself. I'm still searching. I feel the need of really discipling these four ministers, the four of us, to be a discipling group where I can really work in depth with them. And I haven't quite gotten around to this yet. This discipleship ministry is new to me. I'm trying to learn. Some of you may have some suggestions at this point. How about you may be doing this in some church?
I was going to share what Peter Lord's doing.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to know.
Right. He has a council of elders that their main purpose is spiritual atmosphere of the church. And everything that can be spiritually happened, then four of them are on staff, which is minister of education, whatever else the title is, recreation, we have a retreat ministry, and real man of God. Another one was the music director, and he just went. And one other man on staff, and then Peter is the head. Plus, there are four men that are chosen from the body. These two are also from the park, and they're Dwayne Johnson. Yeah, Dwayne Johnson. I didn't come from a church like that. And he's been in it a while.
Basically, what we have set up is like what Jack said. There's the elders and the deacons. Now, each of these men are involved in a discipleship program themselves. They each have a responsibility. The church is set up. Being set up on the basis of discipleship. It's kind of like the reproduction type of thing where you start with one person and that person disciples someone else and it keeps going on and going on. It's basically that way. Like Jack and David and I are in a separate discipleship group that Peter teaches. From this, like each one of us are ministering in a different area. I myself am ministering at a different church, but David and Jack are ministering in the body. So this enables us to have an authority, someone who is more mature in the Lord than we are, that we can say, hey, this is a problem. Could you share with us? Somebody's had a little bit more experience than we've had. Peter's had quite a bit more experience than we've had, since we're still wet behind the ears. But it's been, as far as my involvement, it's been a time where I've had a chance to have someone who's like, for example, been in the ministry for quite a few years, that I could go to and say, listen, I have this problem. Well, the chances are very great that he's had this same problem or run across it or has dealt with it. And what happens is that it makes for an autonomy in your body, because everyone is dependent on everyone else, and it caused that all the parts of the body are working together. And this has been something where, well, I would say that 50% of all that I've learned in church has come from the discipleship ministry, where it's not a large group type thing, but a breakdown. And it's like when you have a small group of people in an intimate atmosphere where you can really pour your life into someone, and where someone can pour their life into you, and there's not the feeling of a formality that you would have usually in, say, for example, a church service where you just can't get together and start sharing like this because of the size. But this is basically...
Well, does he have a set curriculum that he shares with the disciple you with?
I would believe it's different. He's got about five main discipleship groups. I think four of them are mainly adults. I'm older people in the church. I think just one of them is going to do some stuff.
And you get to hear Peter and you understand why he's doing it. But he doesn't have a particular curriculum per se. Peter's really led by the Lord. And, you know, like he comes in and he has his homework, you know, believe me, for every group. It's fascinating how he does it, but every single group, he comes in and he seems to always know what he needs. Never writes it down. That we that I've ever seen, the 5 weeks I've been, like, every week he comes in, he knows exactly what he needs. And he whips it out. He's ready to get it on. And, see, like, what one of the needs in our youth group right now is that there's a stillness, there's a deadness. And, this is what we're doing now with our youth disciples here, is we're spending time trying to find out where that lies. And, one of the greatest things is prayer. And we've been spending much of our meeting time in prayer with you. And, we don't only, we meet 4 hours on Thursday. First hour, we spend recording together. What better way to find out what's inside a guy when he's got a telephone and he's hearing the head, seriously, you find out what's inside. You get to know him. And that's why I love that. I have loved that with him. And I've been here 5 weeks and I felt like I've known him for a year. A long time. Because it's just really personal.
What kind of recreation?
We have a gymnasium there. We do different things. We have girls in it too. My wife, Lynn, cannot say, and some of Robbie, Eugenia's wife, and some of the other ones. So we do something that both of us can play, whether it be basketball or whether it be pillow polo or I don't know something there. That's ministry, that recreation. Then we go into a time of evening. And we've agreed, since he is one of the clients, we have to fast 5 times a week. And we just agreed that on Thursday night we're going to fast and spend our time in prayer as a group. And, he allowed us to make the, well, I don't know if that's true, but he made the commitment for us. And, we could agree or disagree. And, it's been a rich challenge. It really has. And, his interest is to take. And, I know we.
If I could add something,
yeah,
I'm working at a church, another church besides Park Avenue that is not involved in any kind of discipleship ministry. The church you can sense the lack. I'm for discipleship. Man, I am pro discipleship. It's scriptural and it works. I've seen it. I've seen it change my life and it's changing my life. And the thing that I've been trying to do since I've been at Coco, I have a discipleship group of my own of young people. There's three young people out of my young people that the Lord has brought up that are committed, that really want to go on with the Lord. But in our own staff relationships, when I used to work at Park Avenue on the reach out staff, there was such an autonomy and such a closeness because we were together, because we were, we were feeding each other literally. And we weren't just, it wasn't just one guy just pouring out all he had, and saying, but it was that, we can give back. We give back, and we take in, we give back. And it's just a complete, digestion of all this material together. And since I've been at Coco, I've really tried to push discipleship. I've tried to show the benefits. Right now, the door's not open for our staff to be discipled by our pastor. He hasn't really caught the vision for it. But I can see that in our own staff, the lack. The real lack, because it's like we come together on Monday, we spend our time, and then it's like everybody else just does their own thing the rest of the week. And we come back together the next Monday, lay it all out, and everybody does their own thing for the rest of the week. There's no autonomy. There's no really saying, listen, Minister of Music, where are you going? Where can we work together on this type of thing? Or Pastor, what are you going to be doing this next week? What can I do in my youth group that we could be going the same direction? And I've seen it like I've never seen before because I've been in a position where there's not a discipleship ministry among the staff. And where I found the ministry of discipleship, I found such a unity, such a growth that you just can't beat it. And I really appreciate it.
Well,
Any of you have any problems as staff members?
The situation that Ray just talked about sounds like the one that I had. You know, we meet together. And it sounds like fulfilling his role by having our staff meet and occasionally fill out the bond, you know. And that's it.
I'm not defending the men, but I do think that prayer and acceptance of who's good work for us, Bob, I really do. There are plenty of schools available. If somehow
if they work, I know it's not happening on Park Avenue.
Not only to hear about better staff relationships, but to hear even about what's going on in the Sunday school, for example, and the whole total life of the church. He mentioned the fact that as many of the men that were actually in this meeting that we had last summer were men who were pastors of churches of 100 or 200 members. That's not saying a thing in the world about those guys, but we're never going to change the direction of the Southern Baptist Convention until you get the men who are pastors 2,000 member churches and get them with a new vision and a new direction. That's what Ken was trying to say. I believe he had his hand in front of him.
I was just going to say, along the lines of the pastor, I guess it's partly depends on what the pastor is doing and stuff like that. But I find my own problem is when I wait, so I'm upset about something, and I find myself most effective when I'm really hurt about something. And like, you know, I imagine with both of you, at times it really hurts because you really want that fellowship there. And, you know, if we could let them know that it's not something we're coming down on them for, because like you said, most of them don't have that training. And chances are most of them, too, are always on the verge of being defensive because they're being criticized so much by, you know, everybody, whether they have any right or not. If we could come across to them and say, look, you know, we're not trying to come down on you, you know, but this really hurts. We really desire your fellowship. And with me, you know, I'm doing the same thing the pastor is. You know, I think that, you know, he's not intentionally fighting any of our staff. It's like I'm not intentionally fighting him, but I don't, you know, other than walking out of church on Sunday mornings, I don't make it a point to drop by during the week and say, you know, look, I really appreciate what you've been doing. And if maybe we could, you know, at times admit we're not supporting you like, you know, we should. But we really crave your support also. And if we could have this time to just sit and talk, not, you know, maybe not even plan anything out. Maybe if the problem is flipping through the book, maybe you say we'd like to have a meeting, just throw all the plans out the window for this one meeting so we can just sit down and talk as people and as staff members working together, not looking at any dates coming up, but just at how we're getting along. Approaching it more from that direction rather than
just
what we need.
We've just done something the last 5 weeks. We're on the road to discovering some things. We've had prayer partners among our staff, a different one for each week, the past 5 weeks. And it's not a very big deal, but it's on the road to being helpful. And,
how are you working on
it? Actually, the pastor assigned us. And it has all begun because he's challenging the people of that church to bring in one person per member or per person who's coming this year. And he started out by setting us down and asking us if we were willing and who it was. Who do we have in mind? And then out of some things that's beginning to happen, just like our bookkeeper, the week that she's my prayer partner, she only comes 2 days a week, so we agreed on a certain time, which, you know, I'm away from so many friends of mine. This is nothing in common for me to say, we'll pray at 10 o'clock Arkansas time, and then make it 11 and time. Okay, we'll agree on that. But my bookkeeper, the bookkeeper never done that to me, so we agreed at 4 p.m. that we'd pray, and she came back to tell me that she enjoyed praying with me, but she enjoyed even more being having that prayer time together away from me. But you know, you assume everybody's done. I mean, I don't really assume everybody's done it. But I know how many for it has been to me, but it has gotten kind of, you know, I do it with so many people. So that's been something new, and I really didn't suggest that, although I've talked a little bit about prayer and stuff in there. But it could be a suggestion.
I'm really concerned. I have 2 days I have been challenged for, as you call, prayer discipleship, and this is what we've been talking about in our morning group. And I really want to get into this, but all I have heard is the advantages. Now, do you two, are there any disadvantages? Are there any things that you get in trouble with?
One of the disadvantages that I can see out of discipleship is that if you commit yourself to it and aren't willing to follow up, that definitely has, you know, that has bad effects. It shows that it's a lack of commitment. And I'm not speaking just from seeing; I'm speaking out of experience, out of being, out of putting myself into a position like that and not following through. I'll tell you, especially if you're doing it with young people. Or, you know, with your own staff, you're not going to follow up, you're not going to do and agree on the disciplines that you set. Man, that definitely has bad advantages. It really does, because then when you first get into this thing, you realize how complacent you really are. And you begin to see what it means to be disciplined. You understand what Jesus was talking about when he said, make disciples. You know, I found that to be a disadvantage myself, is that if you're not willing to go all the way into it.
Another disadvantage that Jack was on my staff when we were in Titusville is that, and I think in terms of staff relations at this point, that pastors or even the church so many times demand and want to see results. You know, they want to see an instant Eucharist. Got it right there for you, you know. Put a little water on it, you know, and it sprouts up. But in discipleship, it's very slow. You know, I don't know of many ministries where all of a sudden, you know, in a month's time, you've got 50 or 100 young people. They're usually very slow. That, in terms of staff relations, may cause problems. You know, you've got to get your pastor committed to it and let him see the vision. Tell him, be patient. See, you know, this is... Be patient with me. See what we're doing here. We're trying to build a foundation, a concrete foundation, and lead in that direction.
Well, John, let me ask you this, sort of response to a situation like Bob. Was your situation like that with a pastor? Was he negative? And how were you able to cultivate him to start this and so forth?
He's positive on it. You know,
yeah.
Very positive on, you know, trying to use discipleship techniques built upon reach out in terms of ministering to Sunday school, using the teacher as a disciple maker of a Sunday school class. But he still, I should have probably mentioned his name to others, but you know, he still has the problem, wants to see results, you know. And I get anxious like that a lot of times, you know, wanting to see results. But I came back this past week to the church that I was youth minister at 5 years ago and talked with some young people. But one young man that, you know, I didn't think he was going to do very much, I led him to the Lord,
started discipling, and that young man right now is a businessman, but he is committed to ministering to young people. You know, and that just thrilled my heart again and said, you know, this is right. You know, if there's just one, you know, it's got to have more lasting results than the other things we do.
I was on a, because you were sharing about a staff that the pastor's kind of negative. When I first got there was a real block. You know, I mean, it was not like it was totally turned off. He says no, but it was like he was very at a point where, well, I don't know. You know, there's been so much talk about discipleship, pro and con nowadays, and that you can almost sense a carefulness. The thing that I had to do is that I had to do, and I'm still doing, because we haven't really begun to scratch the surface on it, was like I had to take a small group, and I did have to share some fruit. You know, I had to start to let him see that, yes, these kids are growing, and it is slow. Like I said, it's very slow. It's like an acorn trying to grow into an oak tree. It's that slow. But that there were some results, and that, you know, when the Sunday school teacher started noticing changed lives in the young people, you know, then it was, that was kind of, you know, so it's still not saying gung-ho, you know, let's get going, but his mind is beginning to change as far as how he feels about it.
I believe.
There's some other things that don't have to do with leaders, and I'd be glad to sit down with you afterwards and talk to you about. I wanted to, if that's all right.
Sure.
Okay. Now, I think I can sit down with you more personally.
You want to
sit
down?
The only thing I was going to mention, I'm going to put this in a formal question to you after this, is, you know, one thing that I've noticed, you know, having been in fairly some time myself, and I think we have to remember that pastors and all staff members have to deal with this, is the pastor is under pressure from the church, and we in turn, you know, are responsible to the pastor to produce, because, you know, we are producing, you know, quotes and commitments, and then, you know, the deacons or whoever it might be comes to the pastor and say, you know, why do we need a youth director if not do anything? And like I said, the discipleship ministry is a very close, I think. But I wanted to kind of rephrase this and just, you know, maybe ask some formal questions. And I know that to a certain extent, especially in the discipleship ministry, so you know, I've committed myself to that type of ministry stuff, you know, you'll feel that's a good extent. But yet, on the other hand, you know, you almost have to, well, not really compromise, but you know, or you've got to do something to, you know, keep the rest of the people happy so you can do the kind of ministry you want to do. I'm not sure.
I got
you. Give it some time.
That's
to
right.
How do you respond to that?
Well, how many are all in the conference this afternoon at 4 o'clock?
No.
Okay. Well, here was the...
I have not
outlined the name of the team. Yeah, I remember. I made them see this here. Max Barnett was saying that you take the bus, yeah, that's the whole group, youth group or community church you came. He said you keep on ministering to them, try to do everything you can to make them happy and minister to them as best you can. Since you took the same notes, I said help them through Sunday school, church, thank you. And then down below is a group that will filter out of that who will be your disciples. They're the people who want to go on and really get serious with the Lord. And then the next group he talks about is disciple makers. And that's the group that's going to be making your disciples. And he said, you can't have disciples without disciple makers. They can't have soap without a soap maker. And then the final tip down here, leaders are the disciple makers. And the idea is you still keep ministering up here to the bunch. You work with your sons through the church training, and everything else. Have your soldiers and everything. But at the same time, ministering on the side to a small group as a double thrust. Now, I haven't quite got all this in my mind as to how you plug this into your Sunday school. And I hear, Guy, what you're saying is JC's trying to make his Sunday school teachers disciples, to make disciples. That's the picture, I guess.
Right, I have a common responsibility in the church to decide what I'm doing in terms of reach out to the church. I have a primary responsibility that I have the education from 7th grade through college to be a discipler of the directors in each one of one of those departments. I have one department per acre, per 7, 8, 9, 0, 9. And take them to disciple them, and to in turn, challenge them to disciple their teachers, which most of them have 6 feet in the
Okay. Let me just see. Did I before we get away from this question, are there some other disadvantages that any of you like to mention?
Well, I'd like to just speak to one, and that's what Gilbert said about adoption being slow, and a pastor and someone's looking for results. I think that is a disadvantage. But I think it's only a disadvantage if you don't make your intentions clear. In other words, I'll make an announcement, you know, we're going to start something this week or next week.
Numbers, I know that. But then I've had the younger have begun to learn it again. And this church doesn't work now because I know that's the first question. And, you know, when I go to bed at night after the meeting, I try to get a number ready, you know, so I can say. So they say, oh, that's good. Oh, well, maybe you should say I had a little more. And some things like this, which my mind doesn't do it. Maybe it's because of being in public education where you're successful. You know, I'm bragging now about those eighth graders I taught who now have a master's degree or even a doctorate degree. You see, those are the ones I'm bragging about now.
You've got to deal with men and women, of course, in the business world, too. You
can't
live by numbers.
Yeah, well, that's just one thing I picked out. But I wish that somebody would post some articles or would post some things that said, well, here's the way that we judge success in it. You know, I just picked out one thing.
Well.
But I've had a hard time with my staff. The other people I work with, you know, I began to play a game of answering those questions so that they'll get the stroke of feeling that my work was good. I don't have to have the stroke of feeling. It's a backwards thing I'm doing with.
Well, I had to learn I had to learn myself at this point. I went to the seminary in Fort Worth for 5 years. And
how many people are enrolled in Fort Worth anyway?
And just the very atmosphere of Texas has a lot of numbers on it. And I followed a man who put a tremendous amount of stress. His whole preaching and everything else was, we got to have 1,400 in Sunday school next summer. We got to have 15. That was the whole thrust of his ministry, really. And I say that in love. And it took me 5 or 10 years to somehow let that die down, where we don't try to put stress on numbers. We're just trying to do what God wants us to do the best way we know how to do it. But now how do you go about this? I think this is somewhat of a denominational thrust. Do we have high attendance, something like
that? How do you evaluate yourself? Maybe that's the question that I'm seeking for. How do you evaluate yourself? I want to draw myself up in one more month from today. I want to do that. To evaluate 6 months of work. But I'm not sure how I'm going to evaluate that.
Well, you may evaluate on one basis, and the pastor may evaluate on another basis, and the church may evaluate on yet another basis. That's right. So, that's true, right. But I think it's a long term of schooling the whole church, and not on the proper values, and that takes time to do this. Let me say one other thing here before I get away from it and come back to this. Okay, I was going to try to shift gears a little bit here, but let me say this. A big part of this whole discussion revolves around the pastor. The pastor is a key. I'm very conscious of that, and it puts a tremendous responsibility on that man that the church calls as pastor. And how far the church goes, how far the staff goes, it seems the pastor is not flowing in the right direction. It's a very delicate situation. And I think, there again, that it takes a lot of prayer. My people and my staff may feel about me like I look at some fellow pastors in my own association. I don't see how they hardly put up with some of these men. You know what, I say that in love, but the men are just, as I said, not doing an adequate job of coming in. But what the answer is, to affect that change, it's very difficult, isn't it? But I think love, I think prayer can really be brought to bear that can move some of those situations, change some of those situations. I feel like I need to say that really the pastor is still the key to the church. That's what it said in the Revelation, wasn't it? The pastor holds. He held the stars.